Maine's food supply, and tips on staying informed and engaged during the coronavirus crisis. Today we continue our two-hour programs related to the COVID-19 pandemic. In hour one, safely getting food to people. We'll address how grocery stores are faring and adopting safe practices. Then we'll hear how restaurants are trying to cope and connect with diners. In the final part of the hour, we'll learn how farmers, producers, and food pantries are doing. Also, we'll have the state's food safety expert on the line to answer questions. In today's second hour, we turn to ways to stay informed, educated, and entertained while abiding by stay-at-home orders. We'll hear from organizations that are moving their offerings online. And we'll get ideas for interesting resources to help you get through this difficult period. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine Calling is next after this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Getting food has become one of the primary challenges of day-to-day life these days. Today, we will talk about how the different sources of food in Maine are adapting to the challenges that COVID-19 has brought about. We'll check in with grocery stores, restaurants, farmers, and food banks, and we'll answer your questions about food safety. In the second hour of today's show, we're going to learn more about the many interesting resources available to keep us engaged as we stay home. Joining me for this hour, Celeste Poulin. She is Division Director of Quality Assurance and Regulations at the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And Allison Lakin. She is owner of Lakin's Gorgeous Cheese and East 40 Farm in Waldoboro. As always, we want to hear from you. How have you been getting your groceries these days? Wondering if it's safe to order takeout? Or are you a farmer looking for ways to get your produce directly to people? Share your stories and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Celeste and Allison, thank you both for being here on Maine Calling this hour.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Celeste, I don't think many people are aware of your role in overseeing the quality and safety of food in Maine. Describe what you do and how that has shifted during this pandemic.
The work itself has not shifted an awful lot. We're trying to continue doing what we do. And my division licenses all of the retail food outlets in Maine, pretty much everything except restaurants. We license all of the dairy farms. We have a state meat and poultry inspection program that provides inspection services for 6 plants throughout the state that produce beef, pork, and various kinds of poultry and lamb. I also oversee the weights and measures program, and that is anything in the state that is sold by weight or measure. We want to make sure that people are getting what they're paying for, that scales are accurate, gas pumps, any kind of fuel pump. Trying to think if there's anything else. If it's food, we're probably involved.
Right. And a big part of what you do has to do with the safety of that food. There are so many concerns that the pandemic is prompting. How do we know that we're not at risk, Celeste, when we buy, order, or prepare food?
Well, first off, as far as COVID is concerned, the FDA is pretty adamant that they don't have any evidence right now that it's transmitted by food or food packaging. Basically, it's a respiratory disease. It's not foodborne. We do, on the other hand, know that it does live on surfaces for a certain period of time. So if people are more comfortable with wiping down their groceries or takeout containers, by all means, do that. For fresh food, if you're going to the supermarket buying produce, fruit, anything of that nature, you should always be washing that down before you eat or further process or prepare it, anyway, not because of COVID, but because of all of the diseases that are foodborne. And we still have salmonella, E. coli, listeria, and norovirus circulating out there that can also make you very, very sick. So please, everybody, wash your produce. I don't think that takeout or delivery poses that much of a risk. Again, the food itself is very, very unlikely to be transmitting this virus to anyone. And wipe down the packaging. You know, that's certainly, I think, going to help people feel a little bit more secure about what they're eating. Not really sure I have much more to add about COVID itself in terms of food.
Well, I want to bring Allison into the conversation as well. And Allison, tell us, first of all, what kind of farmer you are. I know you have pigs and you have and you make cheese. Who do you sell to, and what has happened to your business during this pandemic?
So I make cow's milk cheese. I started my business in 2011, and I have been a one-woman operation since the beginning. And I made the decision early on to not sell the farmers markets, because that is a very time-consuming, labor-intensive practice. And so I started my model as being wholesale. And it has evolved that 85% of my cheese customers are restaurants. And that also includes the two distributors that I sell to, both within the state of Maine and Massachusetts. So as the recommendations for how restaurants should change their operating ways evolved through the course of March, I in one fell swoop of the course of 3 days, went from having, you know, an average winter to not making enough money to pay anything. I had three orders the week of March 17th, three wholesale orders. So for the pork side of the farm, so my husband and I run East 40 Farm, and we raise the pigs, which graze down in the forest and are fed the whey. They're slow growing. We have them slaughtered at a state licensed facility so that we can only sell them in state. So we sell them both at our farm store here in Waldoboro, but also directly to restaurants. And so that meant that we also then lost some sales to restaurants that were on the horizon for larger cuts of pork. So now my cheese business has always had an online presence. I can ship anywhere in the United States, and generally I mostly see upticks in that business around the holidays, but fortunately people are thinking, oh, I can order cheese from someplace else, even if I'm in Pennsylvania. So I've seen increase in the online sales, which is wonderful. And we have also been modifying how we sell things here at the farm store, so that in addition to having the cheese and the pork, we've also been adding some more prepared foods using the cheese and the pork. So we're sort of value adding our value added.
That's great. You know, Allison, I want to ask you about one of this big projects you've been involved in. But first, I want to turn to Lee Nile, who's calling in. And Lee, I'm turning to you a little bit early because I understand you are swamped. You are the store manager of the Food City Grocery Store in Wilton. Thanks for taking some time for us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the Food City store. How big is it? Who do you serve? What, you know, tell us about your store.
So I'm kind of a small town grocer. You know, we're a little bit above a convenience store, probably smaller than your typical grocery store. You know, pretty local community focused. A lot of elderly clientele, a lot of local walk-in traffic. You know, people that don't want to shop the big stores tend to come to us.
What kind of changes have you made during this crisis?
We've extended hours. You know, kind of the same thing a lot of people are doing for elderly or at-risk people. We've kind of reworked some of our front-end cash-outs, you know, to make sure people are the correct distance away, you know, signage and marking on the floors and that kind of stuff, protective screens around the registers, just to make sure, you know, we're safe as well as customers are safe, you know, washing down everything, wiping everything with sanitizer, soap. I have, you know, a local power washing company coming in and washing my carts and baskets every few days, just to try to do everything we can.
Have you run out of certain items, and are there problems with trying to replenish those?
You know, the big joke at first was toilet paper. That was the big run. Things are starting to catch up. You know, flour, yeast, eggs, that kind of stuff. It's getting better. I think, you know, the initial fear is starting to be over. People aren't panicking as much. You know, the big push now is to make people understand that there's not a shortage of food. We're getting out of stocks and the shelves are empty because people are panic buying. And trying to get people to understand that, I think, has helped. It's definitely helped our suppliers catch up a little bit. It has made us kind of think outside the box and reach out to some other suppliers to bring in products more, you know, not really geared towards grocery stores, but trying to help people out and keep our stuff stocked.
I know that there are a lot of people who are, whether they're immunocompromised or whether they've been exposed to somebody who has COVID-19, don't want to go into a store. Are you all doing curbside pickup or delivery, or do you not have the staff for that?
It kind of varies from location to location. You know, because we're doing, you know, some of our stores, just like everyone else out there, doing about double the business we normally do, it kind of makes it tough with the staff we have. But, you know, here in my store, we're small. I've been telling people as we see them, you know, if you don't feel comfortable coming in, even if you don't want to be here for a long time, call down. Call down and we'll meet you outside. Or you know, I've been skipping around town delivering stuff to people, trying to help out what we can. So it's kind of, you know, call your local food city, call whoever, and we can definitely work with people to try to help them out. Because, you know, the new limitation, having so many customers in the store at one time, has kind of hampered that a little bit too. So if we can keep people outside the store, and it's only
right, if
help
people
us.
Had to, have you had circumstances with this new limitation limiting how many people can be in the store at once? Have you had people in line outside of the store waiting to be allowed in?
I've been lucky so far. We haven't run into that. You know, I've been close, 13, 14, and thinking the next person through, I'm going to have to limit. I haven't gotten there. You know, some of our stores have. You know, I'm the smallest store in the chain, so that makes it a little bit easier to tolerate. But, you know, I've definitely heard horror stories about other companies from some customers that have come in here. I've been lucky so far. You know, I'm planning on it. I expect it to happen. We just haven't had to do that yet. You know,
yeah.
Part of it is
I want to ask you, why do you you mentioned that you're, you know, you have twice as much business. Why do you think that is? Do you think that people eat out that much and they're not eating out now? Or why do you think business has been up at pretty much every single grocery store, and not just in the beginning, but consistently, you know, for the last 3 weeks or so?
I think some of it originally was panic buying. You know, it started to slow down a few days, and then, you know, there was a press conference from Governor Mills, and that kind of drove our sales a little bit more heavy the next day. Things are starting to calm down a little bit. But I think it's people eating at home, you know, restaurants, bars, takeout facilities, everything's kind of closed. More people at home, kids are home from school, so they're, you know, trying to provide more lunches for them. You know, it's not, you know, our customer count is about the same. People are spending twice as much. And I think I would rather go to the grocery store once today and be done with it than spread it out 2 or 3 days.
I let you go, what's the most challenging part of dealing with this for you in Wilton?
I hope everyone that grows into a grocery store as a customer understands how hard the staff is working and some of the challenges that aren't really at our disposal to solve. Just make sure you're thanking the people that are in there, you know, working through this to try to help people out. You know, it's not perfect times. We're hearing both good and bad feedback from customers, but just make sure people understand that, you know, we're here to help you as much as we're here, you know, to sell product. But, you know, just put a smile on your face and tell the person you appreciate them, and that would go a long way, because, you know, we're working twice as hard to try to keep up.
And Lee, are any of your staff members, are you worried about the exposure?
I mean, you always kind of worry, you know, especially small stores, small companies. You know, we're all kind of a family here, so you kind of worry about each other. And, you know, we've taken some steps to protect people, but, you know, it's definitely a case-to-case basis. We're all kind of worried. And being a small town, Franklin County, Maine, there aren't a lot of cases here right now. So I don't think it's as big of a problem as some other places, or as big of a worry. But, you know, taking it case by case and doing everything we can. We've had some employees in some of the stores that have chosen to just bow out for a little while, and that's okay. You know, we're working with them and working around it to try to keep moving.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for taking a few minutes for us. I know that you're really, really busy. That is Lee Nile, who manages the Food City Grocery Store in Wilton. Also, I want to mention that we reached out to Hannaford to join us on the show today. As you can imagine, they're also very busy and could not join us. They wanted to share a message about supplying food to customers, and this is their note. The food supply chain in the United States is healthy and resilient, so this is not a supply issue. We are seeing unprecedented demand nationwide. The challenge is getting product delivered and on store shelves at a speed that matches this extraordinary demand. We continue to work as quickly as possible to replenish high-demand items when low inventory occurs, and we're working closely with our suppliers to provide our customers with the products they need. We're also searching widely for new sources of supplies to bring product in even more quickly. For high-demand products, we've put purchase limits into place in order to ensure all customers have access. Part of what has contributed to the out-of-stock problem is that many people are stocking up well beyond what they need to care for their families during this time. We encourage customers to purchase what they need and understand that other customers have needs too. We anticipate demand will begin to slow down in coming days, and we will return to normal buying patterns. So the same story, really, that Lee is telling from Food City. And I want to ask you, Celeste, are you hearing this sort of universally?
I am. And we're not seeing that there's really a shortage of food. But again, panic buying. And as I think the last guest alluded to, you know, people can't go to restaurants anymore. And I didn't even realize myself how much I was eating out until all of this. But yeah, we do. I'm hearing from some of the meat slaughterhouses that we inspect at that the last couple of weeks, they've had a lot of people coming in and bulk buying. They've requested additional inspection days. And that kind of just really thrills me because it's good local meat that's produced here in Maine that you're getting from your neighbors. I love hearing things like that. Their concern is being able to keep up with the demand for the product. Likewise, all of the produce inspectors in Aroostook County for the last couple of weeks have been putting in minimum 50 hours. So no shortage of food, but there's certainly a big demand, and everybody is trying to do their part to rise up and meet that.
All right. Well, before we go to a break, I want to go to John, who's calling from Rosemont Market and Bakery. Rosemont, for those of you who live in other parts of the state, is in the greater Portland area. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
So
go ahead.
In the supply part of what I'm hearing, it's true. I mean, it seems to be. I am not necessarily concerned at all about the supply at this point. Would seem to be plenty of availability. I think what you're hearing from a lot of the distributors is, you know, with restaurants being out of business for the last month and this month and next month, that, some companies that do distribution had 1,500 customers before this happened. They're now down to 150. So they have supply, just where can they get it and where can we sell it? And that's one thing. The other piece to it that I am finding is super interesting to me is the amount of fresh produce we're selling. And it seems like people are, you know, having dinner at home, and they are. I mean, it's obvious. We are quadruple the amount of produce that we're going through. It's amazing. I don't even, there isn't even time for, you know, anything to really sit in the cooler too much. It comes in and it goes right out and it gets sold.
John, is Rosemont doing anything special? Are you doing delivery or curbside pickup?
Well, you know, 2.5 weeks ago, it was 2 weeks ago Tuesday, we had the doors open, but our staff was really concerned. And we were talking to our staff and really had some pretty good conversations with managers, people on the floor about their health and their safety. So we decided the next day that we were going to close and go to curbside. And, of course, we had no experience at it, curbside or home delivery. So we went to curbside right away. try to, and it's really a, it's quite a turn of, you know, your business model. But with the managers and the upper management we had, we were able to do it in 24, 48 hours and actually pretty successful at it. And then we went into curbside. We had a friend of ours who was doing deliveries, and he had to take pause because his business kind of stopped. So we were like, hey, we're going to start home delivery. And we set it up. We have a very talented marketing person. She set up on our website with menus, and you know, everybody in the upper management level got together and really made this work. And the next thing you know, we were just, you know, we're figuring it out. I mean, there are certainly bumps in the road, but now that we're two and a half weeks into it, you know, we're starting to figure out how we can. And you, I have to say, it's really, from my perspective, keeping our staff healthy and not burning them out, and just, you know, keeping the supply chain just on an even keel so that it comes in, it goes out. People aren't working crazy hours. You know, it's a lot of stress when you change the way you do things. So it's just, it's really important. But I will tell you that when we changed over from, you know, letting people in the stores to curbside and home delivery, the morale of the staff in the stores went way up. People were all of a sudden feeling like, okay, I feel safe. I can help people. You know, we put them in a position to help people, and they were ready to do it. And for the last 2 weeks, they've been doing it. They're getting a little tired right now. So now we're trying to work on how we get some normalcy in that kind of a schedule.
Wow. Well, John, I really appreciate you calling in, because I know that all sorts of retail, food retailers around the state are scrambling to figure out how to best serve their customers. And it sounds like you've got a bit of a head start. Thank you so much. John's calling from Rosemont Market and Bakery. We do need to go to a quick break. When we come back, our audience comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth. Investments to trustee services. WelchForbes.com. And the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom. UMA.edu.
The White House says the coronavirus could kill up to 240,000 Americans. So where do we go from here, and what can we do to slow down the highly contagious virus? We'll bring you the latest developments on the pandemic and share what you need to know to keep yourself and your family healthy. Join us for an hour-long special, Coronavirus, a Weekly Report from NPR News.
And you can listen to that tomorrow at noon here on Maine Public Radio. Trusted news, quality entertainment, and lifelong learning is what Maine Public Television is all about, four channels strong. We've made some adjustments to provide more daytime educational fare, from science to history programming for the older kids who find themselves home during this time of social distancing. We have the PBS Kids channel for preschool kids, but our main channel just added more afternoon programming for older learners, starting now at 1:30 each afternoon. And the Maine Public World channel is now doing the same each weekday afternoon from 12 to 5. Television programming that is worthwhile and educational to watch. See the schedule for our Maine HD and World channels at mainepublic.org. Click on the television drop-down.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how people are getting food during this crisis and what are the ways to do it safely. My guests are Allison Lakin, who is owner of Lakin's Gorgeous Cheese. She is involved in efforts to get food producers to bring their product to consumers. And Celeste Poulin, Division Director of Quality Assurance and Regulations at the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. Joining us now is Steve Hewins. He is President and CEO of Hospitality Maine, which includes the restaurant industry. Thanks so much for calling in, Steve.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jen.
Because we have Steve on the line for this segment of the show, we're going to be talking about how restaurants are faring and adapting. So if you have questions or comments about restaurants, now is the time to call or send us a message. Now, as in the next few minutes, call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Steve, restaurants are among the hardest hit businesses in the state right now. How bad is the situation? Do you have numbers?
Yeah, it's pretty much as bad as it could be, I suppose. Most restaurants that are open are operating with, in many cases, just a single chef, nobody else in the staff. Then there are a bunch of restaurants that just have shut down because they just can't operate even takeout or pickup effectively. So of those ones that are open, though, they are doing some innovative things because restaurants are part of the food chain. In fact, it's a different chain than groceries and other stores. You know, they source their produce and their goods and from a different channel that than the public would normally do through restaurants. So, you know, there's a food security side to that. There's also, you know, frankly, a bit of a you know, motivation of people to try to you know, look forward to something different and not just be locked in and making their own meals, but perhaps get a chance to get takeout service from places they didn't ever have been to before and offer diversion from, you know, what people are going through generally.
Steve, we've seen some efforts around the state to support local restaurants. I saw in Waterville there was the Takeout Challenge. I'm wondering what kind of impact that those local efforts to get people to take takeout from restaurants that are still open, has it made a dent?
Yes, it has. And in fact, that's what we're seeing is local communities are posting the restaurants that are providing takeout. You know, we thought about doing that from a statewide level, but we realized that this is happening so dynamically in the local markets that people are really kind of focusing around that. In my own town of Falmouth, that pushed around Falmouth, all the Falmouth restaurants that were offering takeout and diversions from, you know, making your own meals at home. And so we are seeing a lot of that. And what I'm seeing around that, too, by the way, is a lot of the restaurants, and even the ones that were did takeout previously, they're adjusting their menus a lot. And they're not a typical takeout menu. They tend to be offering meals for families. So you'll see some really high-end chefs that are preparing, you know, meals for four for like $40 or things that are off their main menu that they might get $30 or more per order, and now they're sort of adjusting it for the needs of people that are at home and locked in their houses.
Steve, we've all watched those kitchen shows on TV. They're so fun to watch, but they are places where people are working side by side, shoulder by shoulder. Yeah. Now, for those restaurants still operating in Maine, what added regulations do they have to meet in order to maintain safe and healthy practices in terms of the physical distancing and in cleanliness?
Right. Well, you know, restaurants in Maine are highly regulated, licensed by the state, and they require food safety certified staff on every shift. So any restaurant operating right now has at least one individual that is ServSafe and food handling qualified. So ServSafe is the program that we offer across the state. It's the most widely used program to protect the public and workers on safe handling of food. So you can be assured that there'll be somebody on staff doing that, number one. Regarding the distancing and that sort of thing, most restaurants have adopted guidelines that we provided them that has come from the National Restaurant Association. And so there are higher levels of safety being dealt with, both in the producing the food, but also even the delivery and the curbside pickup and the methodologies around that. The distancing, if you go pick up food at a restaurant, often it'll be brought out to your car, but if it's not and people have to come in and get it, then you'll see that there's a distance between the server at the counter that you're getting it from and where you pick it up. And almost all of them are doing advance payment online ahead of time, so there's no money being transferred between that.
Celeste, for people who may be wary of having other people prepare their food, what can you tell them about the spread of virus through food preparation?
Well, I'm not, you know, a epidemiologist.
I was going to ask Celeste that, Steve. I'm going to ask Celeste, one of our other guests. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
that's
Celeste.
A good idea.
There really isn't. If you're talking about the COVID virus, I really don't think that there is much risk of food transmission, really any at all. As far as restaurant food goes, what we know about the virus so far is that it doesn't like porous surfaces, and food is pretty porous. I'm also not clear on how heat impacts it. But, I mean, again, just to reiterate, the FDA is saying that there's little to no risk of transmission of this through food or food packaging.
And Allison, a question for you. I know many producers like yourself have been so affected by the closures or limited service that restaurants are able to provide. Talk about that relationship between the producers in Maine and the restaurants in Maine.
Well, as we all know, living here, Maine has an incredibly vibrant and ever-evolving restaurant scene. And one of the great things that you can do as a producer is walk up to the kitchen door and say, I make this great stuff. Let's talk about it. And that is a great way to get into onto a restaurant menu. And certainly with the, as Steve was saying, so many of the restaurants now which are trying to shift over to takeout menus are limiting their menu options. So while some are still trying to buy directly from producers, that has been curtailed massively in all types of produce from greens through cheese and meat.
Yeah, so especially some of these, you know, the restaurants Maine's become known for, these really, really, really fine restaurants written up in national magazines. These are the very restaurants that are buying from local producers, right, Celeste?
Yes.
Yeah. We have a tweet here. Somebody tweeted a photo of a restaurant selling goods like toilet paper, soup broth, and produce. And the tweet said, high-profile Detroit restaurants are selling groceries to stem losses from coronavirus. Steve, is that happening here? Are any Maine restaurants selling things they don't usually sell?
Well, we've seen some of that, no question. A lot of them are trying to sort of sell down their stock that they have in-house, knowing that they're going to be in this for a while. We sought some guidance from the state on that, and there are no laws necessarily against that. We would caution any restaurant to not invite people to come in and browse the shelves or anything like that. But it is possible we're going to see more innovative approaches, you know, to try to use sources for items that they have available through them, through, as I said, through the other distribution channels that restaurants operate through that are different from grocery stores. And it remains to be seen. We're not offering guidance on that yet.
All right. Well, we're going to go to Bill, who's calling from the Maine Farmland Trust. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks so much for the conversation. And hello, Allison. Good to hear your voice again. I was just calling in to point out a couple of things. This situation in the short term is really emphasizing the importance of the availability of healthy local food, and it's more important than ever. And we have a great system of talented farmers all across the state who have the capability of providing a lot more food to Mainers and folks in the region. And just, you know, I know we're working with farmers all around the state to support them. A couple quick points, letting the listeners know that there are a variety of ways to support local farmers, which are local businesses in our communities, and but buying directly from farmers is now becoming more available as they get creative and trying to access those customers. Community-supported agriculture, farmers markets, direct purchasing from farmers is all coming online and available. But I think we also want to try and use this opportunity to build a food system that's more locally focused and provides opportunities for Maine farmers to be producing more food for Mainers and as well as people throughout the region.
Yeah, Bill, thank you. I know we've talked a lot about building more resilient food systems within the state on previous Maine Calling programs long before this pandemic. Steve Hewins, before we let you go, I want to ask you about your thoughts on Maine restaurants, from the Maine restaurant perspective, on building better food systems for locally produced food here in Maine.
Oh, most definitely. In fact, that's definitely the part of the brand, really. I mean, I think visitors that come here, not just for food, but you can extend it to breweries and other, historically, since the beginning of tourism in America back in the 1800s, people were coming to Maine for locally produced food and from farms and also from the sea. And so we have that advantage. We have that infrastructure. And I think it's a big part of where we go forward once we emerge from this pandemic, as to really reinforce the fact that our locally sourced food is the basis for the great culinary experience they'd have here.
Yeah, well, Bill, thanks for your call. A Facebook post from Fork and Spoon, a restaurant in Bangor, we have revamped our menu to have a full entree for dinner. It's required moving our normal menu on our website and Grubhub. It has been a ton of work, but we're getting a decent amount of orders, especially since we added some good desserts. So desserts highly desirable right now. Steve Hewins, thank you so much for joining us. I know it's a very busy time for you. Steve Hewins, President and CEO of Hospitality Maine. Bill from Maine Farmland Trust, thank you for calling in. We are going to take another quick break. You're listening to a special two-hour Maine Calling. During this hour, we're talking about how food is getting to people in Maine and how to handle food safely. We have Celeste Paulin with the Department of Agriculture on the line, as well as Allison Lakin, a cheesemaker and farmer from Walderboro. In this next segment, we will talk more about the role that farmers, fishermen, and other producers play. When we come back, more of your comments and questions as well.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Otelco Cloud and Managed Services, helping Maine businesses manage IT systems and business communication. Learn more at otelco.com. And Maine Community Foundation, proud to support Maine Calling, a forum for ideas and issues that matter most. MaineCF.org. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On April 3, 1891, the law instituting secret ballot voting in Maine elections, commonly known then as the Australian ballot, went into effect. Previously, Maine voters had voted in a variety of ways, including a show of hands style in some towns. Others voted in a manner where voters had to bring their own ballots to submit that candidates had passed out to them in advance. Not surprisingly, voter intimidation and bribery were commonplace, as votes were far from secret.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park and the Island Institute. Happy birthday, Maine!
Even as coronavirus cases shot up in China, Americans were getting reassuring messages from the top.
Based on what we know now, our assessment remains that the immediate risk to the American public is low.
I think it was an incomplete message.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Why the American public was so ill-prepared to face the coronavirus pandemic this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up this afternoon at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today in this hour, how Mainers are getting food during this crisis and how it can be done safely. We turn our attention back to farmers and other producers now. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I want to turn back to you, Allison. We've sort of very tangentially touched upon what you have been up to, and I want you to have some time to explain this. Because of the drop-off in orders for your farm, in your cheesemaking operation, you had an idea that is now the Maine Farm and Seafood Products Directory. Tell me about that.
Well, as I looked to see that I had a lot of perishable cheeses that I suddenly had no market for, I wanted to reach as many people as possible to let them know that I had it. But I also started having conversations with other cheesemakers and other farmer and producer friends of mine who were, of course, in the same boat. And I looked to see what I could do with the technology that I had on hand that wouldn't cost anything to start spreading the word. So I started a shared Google Sheet document with categories representing online sales, pickup, delivery, type of product, and then also included in that some farmer-to-farmer useful information, like could you host somebody else selling their product at your farm, and do you bulk buy any materials that someone could place an order to save money on? And took to social media to start sharing this list as people were contributing. When I created it, it was an open document. Anybody could fill it out, but it also meant being an open document that someone could accidentally delete something, which would have been bad. And within about 24 hours of my creating that and starting to circulate it, I got onto a call with Maine Cooperative Extension, who offered to take on the management of the list, make use of their resources of technology and staff to turn it into a website, which could then be maintained in a safe way so that data wouldn't be lost. The decision was made to then backtrack the data so that the original list, the original database, is perpetually being updated. And I do have to mention that Eudena Clark and Rebecca Gray are the two women that are handling all of that data. They're doing an amazing job. And Jason Lilly at Cooperative Extension has been coordinating my fairly much daily thoughts about how things could maybe be improved or things that we could communicate with other parts of the population. So at this point, there are about 350 farmers, fishermen, and other producers, cheesemakers, fiber makers, and it represents all 16 counties. And I'm looking at the website now on the University of Maine Extension page for the Maine Farm and Seafood Products Directory, where there's a wonderful map. And as of right now, there have been 64,290 views.
Wow. And you know, I'm looking at it too. It really is great and easy to use. And so we've posted that on the Maine Calling Facebook page, and we have also put it on our webpage. So if anybody is interested in seeing the Maine Farm and Seafood Products Directory, these are people who are all selling directly to the consumer. We also have a note from Elena on Facebook. She writes that there is a group on Facebook called Maine's Working Waterfront Seafood Connect, and that group is helping get the names of fishermen and women who are selling their catches directly to the consumer, a great resource and a way to keep eating healthy and help our marine fisheries industry. So related to what you're doing, so I don't know if you all have connected, Celeste, but it sounds like if the folks from the Maine Working Waterfront Seafood Connect haven't already, they need to get their information to the Cooperative Extension.
It is very easy. There is a form right on that page. If you are not on the list, you can fill out the submission form, and Yadina will get you inputted. I have been in contact with that group and shared that information with them. What my goal in this is, as Bill from Maine Farmland Trust has said, we want to build a food system that has a more local focus. We want to make it easier, or I want to make it easier for eaters to find the food they want to eat without having to go to the grocery store. You know, and this is the time of year when, as someone who is either a grower or has milk-producing livestock, this is when there are different sets of expenses. Right now, people who have grower CSAs who will be having greens later have to be buying seed now. This is not a good time to be not having the steady normal income. The people that make goat's milk cheese, they have just coming out of kidding season when they have had the baby goats born, and there's a lot more milk. So this is a time when you start to see a push of production for the fresh Sev and other fresh goat cheeses. Those need a market. So all these people that are contributing to this list are saying, this is where we are, and this is how you can connect with us.
All right. Well, I want to go to Sarah Alexander, who's calling from the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You know, you've been listening to the conversation and about how important not only to support farmers, but how creative farmers are having to be now that a lot of their the restaurants who buy their produce and buy their cheese and buy their meats are not either not operating or having buying a lot less. What do you want to add to this? Do you agree that this may be a pivot point, that we may be developing some of the systems that we need that will last into the future?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, I think in Maine, we are very lucky that we have a pretty robust local food system in place already. We certainly have more in place than some other states do. And I think the collaborative nature of our farmers and the creativity and the real commitment to local food that our restaurants, that our citizens have, you know, everybody's in this to support farms and make sure we can have good, healthy food. And at the same time, there's so much more that could be done. New England imports about 90% of our food that we eat on a regular basis. And so that just shows that there's still a lot of room for continuing to increase the amount of food that's produced here in Maine and New England, on the livestock front, on the vegetable front, fruit, fisheries, for sure. All of these are critical pieces of the puzzle for how we can have resilience and be able to feed ourselves. And I think this crisis that we're in with COVID-19 just shows us where some of those gaps in our food system are. So I think farms are stepping up to fill some of those critical gaps. And we see that in a lot of different ways. You know, as Allison has explained and some of the other guests, you know, there's a lot of quick pivots that individual farms have had to make. This is pretty early in the growing season, but farms still are selling at farmers markets. And I just wanted to mention that that has been a really important lifeblood for a lot of our farmers who, you know, the farmers markets have put in place new safety protocols. I've been at the Southern Maine Farmers Market here in Portland, and the vendors are about 50 feet apart, and each of the vendors have put in place some pretty strict protocols to make sure that safety is taken into consideration in the shopping. But those are really important markets for our farmers. So I would encourage folks who are listening to go to mainfarmersmarkets.org and see which farmers markets are still operating in your areas and support those farms there. And then, as Allison has explained, a lot of farms have gotten really creative with creating farm boxes. So maybe this is an early version of a CSA share. A CSA is community supported agriculture. So traditionally, these are shares that somebody might purchase in the early season, so about this time, to say that they're going to either get a certain amount of product from that farm over the course of the growing season or have a certain amount of money to spend at their farm stand. And a lot of farms are starting those earlier with maybe a farm box program. There have been several examples of those. And there are lots of CSA shares still available for this year. So I would encourage folks to look into those as well. And then we've been seeing some really interesting collaborations between restaurants and farms. You know, as many of your guests have already explained, the restaurant scene here does support so many of our local farmers. And when that market, you know, went away overnight, people had to quickly pivot. But now some restaurants are selling products directly from farms. So that's been great to see as well. And
well,
we
Sarah,
have a listing
ahead.
Of all of these folks. Yeah, for Mosca certifies over 550 organic producers in the state of Maine. And similar to the cooperative extension map, you can go to the mosca.org website and see a map of all of those producers. And we do have an up-to-date listing of who's doing on-farm sales.
Great. And we'll put that on our Facebook page and on our webpage. Thank you so much for calling in. That's Sarah Alexander with the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. We have a Facebook post from Jackie. As farmer market vendors, how can we get our scales calibrated? And please let people know our farmers markets are diligently trying to create response plans for customers and vendor safety. That's a little bit of what Sarah was saying. So, Celeste, very quickly, how can farmer market vendors get their scales calibrated?
If they would like to contact the office, I can arrange for them to drop their scales off. We can have those calibrated at the metrology lab, and then they can pick them up. And we'll figure out a way to do that with no face-to-face contact.
All right. Well, I want to turn very quickly to Kristen Maley. She's president of Good Shepherd Food Bank. Thanks for joining us, Kristen.
Thank you for having me.
I understand Good Shepherd has been constantly adjusting what you're doing in the current crisis. Where are you getting your food now?
Well, we are switching to a model where we are primarily purchasing the food that we distribute to our partners, who then get it in turn to Mainers in need who are in their communities. Historically, 70% of the food that the food bank gets is donated to us, primarily from retailers. But anyone who's gone to a grocery store lately can see that there is absolutely no excess food to be had. So we've seen a significant decline in donations. And also we've seen a shift in our partners with how they're distributing food in order to maintain the safety and welfare of their volunteers and the patrons who are visiting food pantries, moving to these low-touch models of distribution, which is really causing us and our partners to pivot to distributing more shelf-stable food, which is normally a smaller portion of our food. More than 60% of the food we normally distribute is perishable items. So we don't have much shelf-stable product to begin with, and now that's really what our partners are needing more than ever. So we've had to spend $1 million over the past 10 days just to buy food. That's normally almost our entire budget for food, for buying food in an entire year. So we are scrambling, trying to get as much food as we can for our partners. And fortunately, we've been getting funding from community members to help us support those food purchases. We absolutely need more. We need to source about 2.5 million pounds of food every month to be able to meet this need. And it's definitely getting increasingly challenging to get the food we need to help our Mainers in need who are struggling with food insecurity every day.
Wow, Kristen, you've gone through $1 million in buying food in 10 days, usually the budget for a year. Are you getting any support from any kind of government grants or anything like that to keep up that pace?
So we are actually today going to be applying for some of those loans that you've been hearing about, because we are keeping all of our staff. And so we are applying to be able to get funding to cover our payroll, which will absolutely help. And hoping again that those will be loans that will be forgiven, since they'll be used to keep people employed. So we're certainly hope to be able to take advantage of some of those government opportunities. This will be our first one. And up until then, it's been private philanthropy. It's been individual Mainers and companies in Maine who have been supporting us so far.
Well, Kristen, thank you so much for calling in. That's Kristen Maley, who is president of the Good Shepherd Food Bank. Just about a minute left. Celeste, I want to turn to you. A lot of questions still, even though we've been talking about farmers markets and some of the changes they're making. Clearly, people are looking forward to farmers market season, but are worried about safety. They are worried about physical distancing or social distancing, whatever you choose to say it. And also, you know, the way that farmers markets have the food spread out in the open for people to look at and handle. Finally, in about a minute, any thoughts on that?
I would say that the risk is really more from how congested the traffic is at the farmers market than it is from the food. I've seen people trying to set up their vendor tables, really keeping that in mind. They're doing a good job, but it's really going to be very heavily dependent on the patrons to maintain that distance, to keep everybody safe.
All right. And Jackie, who had posted on Facebook earlier, says customers can expect to be asked not to handle products, to use credit or debit cards, checks, or exact change, to keep interactions as brief as possible. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. That is Celeste Poulin, Division Director of Quality Assurance and Regulations at the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, and Allison Lakin, owner of Lakin's Gorgeous Cheese at East 40 Farm in Waldoboro. We've mentioned a lot of resources on today's program. Our web team has been listening and posting those on the Maine Calling web page and on the Maine Calling Facebook page. In our next hour, we're going to talk about ways to stay engaged while staying at home, and we'll get ideas for interesting and helpful resources online. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this news.